going through a checklist like that. That's only going to happen every 100 hours in a rental plane.
Hey, Dick, this is WS2N. I'm going to sign. But I think the repeat is going to keep on going here. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I thank you, Paul, for space report number 242. And yes, because of the daylight savings time, we're getting a little extra time tonight. And so Alan's got an interesting subject. Bye-bye for now, Paul. We'll see you next week. Boy, all these failures in these rental airplanes makes them sound like death traps. Alan, I'm amazed that the FAA or somebody hasn't got a hold of this. By the way, I thought the most reliable thing in the world is a magnetic compass. And you're telling me that on some of these aircraft, the magnetic compass is failing. And by the way, that carpenter's level in your bag, that, in my opinion, is a poor man's ball bank indicator. Are you telling me that modern-day instrument panels don't contain a ball bank indicator that I used to have on my Piper J3? Over to you, Alan, K2LAW.
No, they definitely do, but you're not going to see them like you did in the older aircraft. In the glass cockpit aircraft, you do not see the ball. You know, that's, and you might remember in your training, you know, you were told to step on the ball and center it. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. And if you're doing a properly coordinated turn, that ball bank indicator stays in the center. And the ball bank indicator will tell you whether or not you're flying at a 45-degree angle if you're not in a turn. If I'm ignoring the rotation of the magnetic compass, and if I'm in a continuous spiral turn, I could still have a zero indication on that ball bank indicator. Over to you, Alan.
Right, well, there's also, that's your turn coordinator and the turn indicator. And that you can also use as a backup in case your attitude indicator fails. But guess what? In the modern day glass cockpit airplanes, it ain't there.
So the real mechanical ball bank indicator is not there. It's now been converted to a chunk of electronics, and that electronics can fail. If that's true, that's going to give me a rather uncomfortable feeling, like you're describing. I'm beginning to think, Alan, only a fool is going to rent an aircraft these days. Over to you.
Well, I guess the appeal of flying is very great. I got to say, the people who did it 10 years ago, I probably would not have done it unless it was a real high-end, you know, aircraft that was really taken care of. And by the way, most of those, like my plane, I will lease my plane out, but I get top dollar for it. Most people are going to rent planes that rent for over $100 less per hour. And that's what you're going to get. That's your typical rental that has nothing in it and old stuff that can fail, which it does all the time. But that's par for the course in aviation. But if you're forward-looking, you know, I look for trouble all the time, so I think along these lines. Most people only think of these problems when they're in it. I try to think of it long before I'm in it, so I'm prepared. And certainly the advent of GPS on an iPad, wow, that's really, really saved the day for a lot of aircraft, because now you can turn an old aircraft that's a typical six-pack analog dials into one with pretty much a real glass cockpit. But an iPad can fail. You know, you forget to charge it. That's probably the number one reason how it does fail. And then what do? You don't have your basic instruments. So you got to have things you can use that are quick and easy and act as backups, like a radio. Very few of my friends actually have radios. I was shocked by that they weren't carrying radios in their bags. So that's an easy backup to have. And having this, you know, device where you can just take two suction cups and throw them up to the side windows and know roughly where the radar sweep is coming from, I know I'd love to have that if I was flying in the clouds and my instruments were not doing what they should be doing. It can make all the difference. Just knowing you have a little control will give you more options and make you feel more confident that ultimately you'll get out of it.
Repeater, timeout.
Yeah, the degree of difficulty to build what you're describing, a simple detector that picks up the ASR-8 radar from the airport or some of these other radars, that's relatively easy, Alan. And one a left window and one a right window. And And there's ways you can make a slight variation of that, which will tell you not only is the signal coming from the right side of the aircraft, but it could differentiate right forward versus right aft. So a simple detector, because that radar signal is so potent, that wouldn't be a very expensive piece of hardware. And if somebody out went and designed that, do you think there'd be enough pilots that'll buy it, that'll make it worthwhile to manufacture it? Over to you, Alan, K2RIW.
Question, in one way, do you like?
Go ahead, Hank.
What type of aircraft do you operate, Alan?
An Arrow 3.
Here's your Arrow.
77.
It's still a relatively older aircraft, and, you know, you have a lot of maintenance costs in order to keep new radios, and I think you said you had a glass cockpit display, which I assume is one of the Garmin products. You know, there's just so many things you can do to reduce your risk. It's, you know, especially since you're flying a single, it's, you know, I think the biggest thing to think about is whether you really want to stay in a single. You probably should consider a multi, so you have two different sources of electrical generation.
I'll definitely be doing that. I'm already looking into that. But the real things that is driving me to make these products is that I do often rent aircraft because I do like to take commercials to different areas of the world and then rent an aircraft and go flying around. And I want to be able to have backups for those planes. My plane, I'm not worried. I have triple backups in my plane. I'm not really worried about any of these problems in my plane, but in your average rental plane, it's really nice to have these little backups. Dick and I have been talking about another product for landing, which I won't go into now. But there's, you know, these simple technology products that, like Dick said, would not be that hard to manufacture and therefore not that expensive. And it could all be made portable. So you just put it in your bag when you're renting the plane. You suction cup your detectors up to the side walls there, and you have yourself another means of direction finding if you're caught, you know, by surprise when you're flying VFR. Just as simple as that. Of course, I'll switch over to my GPS. I have synthetic vision on my plane. I don't even need to look out the windows anymore. I can literally paint them shut, and I can land almost with the synthetic vision. But rental plane's not going to have that.
I understand, but let me drop it for a second. Okay, Alan, if you build this thing that you're talking about, how do you get it approved? I mean, most of these handheld GPS devices that are out there aren't TSO'd, so you really can't use them to go flying in the soup. And they're great for VFR, but you know they're not a legal method of filing for IFR. So you know who's going to buy something that doesn't really give them the ability to use it when it's when you most need it, because it won't be as affordable, it won't be FAA approved. So you'll need to go to something, you know, that is built in, and you got to do all the approval costs for that and get a TSO. And it's just, I just see a major set of hurdles in your way. And one YDY, and with that I'll be clear, guys. Thanks very much for letting me jump in.
You might be misunderstanding what I think Alan is asking, Hank. He's renting an airplane that is IFR equipped, and he's worried about failure of the equipment, so he wants backup in his pocket, in his bag that he carries on. I think that's what you're asking, Alan. KC2RFN, K2RIW.
And I'm not looking to fly IFR with this. It's not meant to take the place of proper IFR equipment in flying. It's just another thing you can pull out of your bag to give you extra information if you should need it. It's just something as simple as that. And you don't need FAA approval or anything. I put anything in the plane I want. It's really not any different than me bringing night vision on the plane, in the plane with me as well. I wouldn't use that in place of IFR either, but it sure can help a lot. And that's the idea behind it. Something simple, cheap, and portable that you can throw into a rental plane and go.
Are you saying, Alan, that you own night vision and you can use that in some useful manner in your aircraft? Give me some words on that one.
I don't own night vision yet, but I'm going to get it. And the reason is I was at an airport in the mountains somewhere up north, and I'm talking, it was a dark night. I mean, I couldn't see anything. And even though the landing light was on, I could barely see the taxiway. And of course, the paint job on it was awful. It wasn't really kept well. So at night, I could not see a real difference between the paved taxiway and the dirt next to it. So I couldn't find the runway. I just guesstimated, and I got lucky and was able to find it. But if I had night vision, I could throw that on, and I could look out the window, and I can see where I was going. As it was, I had to stick a flashlight out the storm window and use that to see the edge of the taxiway. So I don't need approval from the FAA to put on a pair of, use some method of night vision to help me navigate the airports. And all airports are a little different. You know, there's little nooks and crannies. It's just like a parking lot. They're all more or less the same, but there's little nooks and crannies that you can very easily miss an entrance or an exit, or something that's kind of sitting there, you know, just out of the way that if you're not careful, you might hit it. So that's a great example, is just to have a night vision scope that you can just peek out as you're going, and you can actually see what's ahead of you. Even though my GPS in my plane gives me the synthetic vision to actually see the taxiways, I'd rather see it in the real world than see the reproduction through the GPS.
When you used your flashlight out the window to see the taxiway, I presume you were on the ground and hadn't taken off yet. You weren't using your flashlight out the window in order to navigate a landing. Is that true, Alan? Go ahead.
No, that wouldn't work. No, I was taxiing in an alien airport from the ramp where I was parked, trying to go to the end of a runway in an airport I'd never been at. And it was just pitch black dark that night. And I couldn't see anything. And the tower just wasn't helping me. That's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. And they basically said, "Hey, you're too far away. We can't help you." I mean, it's the nightmare scenario. I was always told you can ask for help and you'll get help. And I asked for help and they said, "Well, we can't help you." So I had to figure out how to find the runway. It was the oddest thing I'd ever run into. I didn't think that could ever happen. But it happened because it was nighttime and it was, you just couldn't see anything. And there wasn't enough power coming from my light to illuminate enough for me to see, you know, far enough ahead of me. Because in a plane, you know, you got to be very cautious. You have to see well ahead of you before you commit yourself, you know, to rolling that next 10 feet or 20 feet. Because you may not be able to stop that plane as quick as you do a car. And, of course, you got those wings sticking out. So if there's a tree there or there's, you know, something or a pole, you know, you don't want to find that out at the last minute. So my point is that by putting a night vision, you know, goggles in my bag, if I run into this again, I'm equipped, I'm prepared.
The things that you're describing tonight, Alan, or this morning, my goodness, is there hazards. Wow. I can see how private aircraft pilots can easily get themselves into a fair amount of trouble. If you have the slightest bit of arrogance and false belief in your ability in these situations, there's only 50 ways you can get yourself in trouble. What are you, Alan? K2RAW?
You're absolutely right. Let me drop. To me, when I fly, I know it's a risk. I mean, it's not like driving your car, you know, to the store. You are taking a risk. It's calculated risk. And if you're prepared and you're ready, then it's a much lower risk. The reason I don't like the Cirrus aircraft, other than I think it's just ugly, they have a parachute. And it's such a safe plane. Yeah. No, what happens is that these pilots say, "Well, I could use that emergency training, you know, but I'm stressed, and you know, I believe that I spent all this money on this plane to be able to pull, to push a button and have a parachute deploy and take me safely to the ground." And it gives them a false sense of security. There's no reason if you're in a plane and you're prepared for an emergency and you practice them, as I do all the time, that's part of the fun for me, that when the emergency comes, you've done it so many times, that's just part of the flying, you know. I've probably flown with my engine off or, you know, in the idle, more than anybody I know, maybe combined. I will glide down pretending I lost my engine. And it's fun to do. And when the day really does come, I've built the skill up for it and I've got the confidence for it. Same thing with night flying and night airporting, as they call it. You know, I see the same problems over and over again. Do you think airports put money into lighting it so you can see every square inch of it, like a parking lot in a commercial mall or something? Not a chance. Not a chance. Republic Airport won't even turn their landing lights on. Their landing lights, you know, the runway lights, I should say. They don't turn those on for you at a high enough intensity for you to see it. Unless you request it. I mean, you wouldn't think you would have to, but you do.
Repeater.
When you're running your engine at idling speed to practice emergency situations, you got to make double darn sure, and I know you do, that you put on that carburetor each one of those times. Over to you, Alan.
Actually, I don't, but I make sure to cycle it. You know, maybe I'll shut it down for 15 seconds, and then I'll go rev it up again, and then I'll bring it down again, and then rev it up again for the exact reasons you're thinking of.
So you're saying you will periodically put your engine at idling speed, and not all the time that it's in idling speed, you're not using carburetor heat? That would scare me a little bit.
Never do. I almost never use carburetor heat. Almost never. If I'm really high up and coming down, then I'll turn it on. But other than that, when I'll do these maneuvers, you know, I'm really not going to be higher than 2,000 or 3,000 feet. Nah, I don't use it. Don't need it.
The training I was given, which maybe was overly conservative, led me to believe that you can get an iced-up carburetor on a warm spring day, on a warm summer day, at relatively low altitudes. K2IW.
Well, you're right, and it's humidity dependent, but when I first started training, we did use carburetor heat to land all the time. And then someone had said, just stop doing that. And we did. And what happened is that the incidence of people doing touch and goes and taking off at partial power because they left the carburetor heat on diminished to nothing.
How much power do you lose with carburetor heat? Do you lose 5 or 10% of engine power?
I don't know what the actual number is, but I can tell you, having made that touch and go error myself, where I landed with carb heat, and then I cleaned up the airplane to take off, but for some reason forgot to turn the carb heat off, I could feel the difference. I mean, I really had a hard time pulling us into the air. And a 10% difference from the ground going to the air is a lot different than losing 10% while you're in the air. You really feel it, and you begin to wonder, are you going to make it?
Okay. That's obviously a dangerous situation. However, if you did get the problem of icing of a carburetor, by the time you apply corrective action because you can tell the engine is stalling, I think you might lose that engine. And then if you've got to worry about being able to restart it, that could be very troublesome as I see it. Over to you, Alan.
I can't argue with you, but I've done this maneuver. Boy, if I had to really be honest, how many times have I done this? I'd say I've probably done it about 70 times now, 70 or 80 times. Bringing the engine to idle and then heading toward the ground. And I've had no problems, really. Nothing even close to it.
What's the highest altitude at which you've ever initiated that maneuver?
3,000 feet.
So I guess it requires high humidity, or what's what we're really looking for now? Yeah, relative humidity. High relative humidity is what I guess is most likely going to give you high probability of carburetor icing.
Okay, another comment from N1YDY.
You got it, Hank. I'll wait for the beeps.
the shape of the cowling is really very important for determining whether or not the aircraft needs carburetor heat. And you'll find that the Cessnas basically all use it with engines that are not fuel injected. Or the pilot handbook for these airplanes tell you to use it for engines that are not fuel injected. And there was an airplane called the Grumman American for a number of years in the 70s, and it required it less. In other words, I can't remember the circumstances, but you didn't end up clearing the engine as much with that. And where I'm going with this is it's really a function of the aircraft into which the engine is installed. And that's a big determiner whether it's part of a pilot operating handbook to use that or not in one YDY.
So are you saying, Alan, that a well-designed aircraft, some of the heat of those cylinders is getting into that carburetor air?
Okay,
so, you know, there's another issue going on here, and it's called supercooling. And, you know, depending upon the way the aircraft is built and what type of engine it has versus the type of cowling, when you bring the throttle to idle and you practice something like that, you can actually cool the cylinders too much too quick. Basically, it's a form of thermal shock. But, you know, it doesn't happen that often, but it can happen. And the carburetor heat thing is similar in that it doesn't happen that often, but it can happen. You know, he's got this airplane for a number of years, obviously, to get 80 of these power-off landings under his belt, and my guess is that it probably doesn't need to have the carb heat on. But you are right. If he freezes over and the engine actually stops running, then it'll take, you know, he won't be able to restart it in the air because he won't have enough stuff turning to make it work.
A6DVZ with a comment.
If those cylinders cool off too quickly, what are you describing there, Hank? Go ahead.
You know, different airplanes have different requirements. And most guys fly around in a Piper or a Cessna. And again, the Grumman American they describe. But then there's guys that fly around in Beechcraft Bonanzas. And that's a relatively powerful engine mounted in the frame of an airplane. And when you reduce the power on that, you know, it can go from having created in so many degrees of heat per cylinder, I guess is the right way to say it, and it then becomes too cool too quickly, and it is often, it creates damage that doesn't stop the engine right there, but it does lead to having to have a top-end overhaul.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
So by cooling off those cylinders too fast, are you getting close to the point of seizing that engine? Is that what you're saying, Hank?
No, I don't think seizing the engine is what I'm saying. Well, I think what I'm saying is that if you cool them too fast, you'll have wear at an incredibly advanced state for the number of hours you actually operate the engine, and you might end up having to do a top overhaul. I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, how aircraft engines are put together, but what you and I would call a block in a Chevrolet is really called a case half. And inside the case half, you have the oil pump and the crankshaft, obviously, and the camshaft. And then you have the fins in most airplanes that are on the cylinders. And the cylinder can be removed from the case half in order to do what's called a top-end overhaul. You can either change the rings if that's your issue or redo a valve job if that's your issue. There's just so many things that can be done in a partial state in one YDY.
So for extra air, for extra wear to take place, that suggests that the lubrication is failing to those cylinders. Over to you, Hank.
I don't know about lubrication failing. I think what's the way it was explained to me, and you got to remember, I've never owned a Bonanza, but the way it was explained to me is that because you get thermal shock going on, what ends up happening is that the cylinders tend to move relative to the case half in the engine. And when this movement occurs, excess wear is created. Think of it as if you look at cabinets cabinet doors in a house, and you, it's especially true for boats, but if you see the ones that have a frame and then the wood panel in the center, and the wood panel is not affixed to the frame is simply built around it, that's actually a deliberate attempt to prevent diurnal heating and cooling from causing the wood to warp.
Interesting. I'm going to have to leave you guys. It's behind my bedtime. This was TechNet number 1642. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. I'll turn it over to you, Alan. Awful glad you came along, because discussing aircraft is a lot of fun. And I was a student pilot at one time. But I was going to college at the time. It got expensive, and I had to give it up. So you're doing the fun stuff. KC2RFN for any final. K2RIW clear but listening. Bye-bye for now.
Hey, Dick, I often relate the story you told me about you going up for your solo and then deciding to fly over your house. I'm sure that gave your instructor the heart attack. hey, Dick, the invitation's open anytime you want to take a flight over Long Island. I may actually do that tomorrow in the late morning if I can get it in before, work intercedes. So you're always welcome to come along. And I heard Hal in there, too. He's a pilot, too. It's nice to see another pilot slash ham. I guess that's goes for you, too, Hank.
Yeah, people with a pilot license and a ham license, they're relatively rare animals. I'm guessing there's one of them per 5,000 of the general population.
What did you think more pilots would be ham operators? But do you know, I don't think I've met a single one at the airport. They don't even know what ham radios are. And no interest.
Same thing when it comes to radio control model airplane flyers. The radio is so important, you would assume there'd also be hams. You go to a meet where you meet 300 pilots flying radio-controlled airplanes, and you might find one or two that are hams.
Well, not as much crossover as you might think. Interesting. Well, maybe that's why we have so many bad radios in rental aircraft.
Guys, I'm going to sign. I really am this time. It's been a pleasure. I'll talk with you later. And 1YDY is clear.
Hey, good night, Hank. Good night, Dick. And Hal, if you're still in there, say hello.
I'm in here. I just wanted to make a comment when you mentioned about an aircraft with dual omnis and dual panel. I would drop to the ADS and use that for getting a fast direction fix. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's an idea too if you have a plane that has it.
Some an IFR plane has dual omnis, dual NAS and comms, she only has ADS. I know in my bird, I've got a full IFR plane. And ADS is just a standard thing. I've relied on it many times to get a fast fix. I don't have a glass panel.
I gotcha. By the way, Hal, you should come. I'll show you my plane and see. I had everything ripped out of it and modernized, all Garmin, glass in there. Really a gorgeous plane. I'm sure you'd really appreciate how I rebuilt this plane inside and out. It doesn't look anything like its original, so if I want to go up, just meet me at Atlantic or Ventura, and I'll take you up.
I may take you up on it. I've been so busy. The town's rebuilding my bird for what they pulled. And, about carburetor heat, I don't know. When I call it back, you don't have a carburetor and not still fuel injection. It's just a matter of fact. You put the carb heat on, and I do get a little, on approach, I do grease the engine to make sure if I have to do a go around, the engine's not going to sputter on me. Being it's a light combing, it's a little more temperamental.
Yeah, Roger, I don't really worry about that anymore because the new plane is fuel injection, but most of the rentals have the carb heat. I've just found that it's best to have backups and be prepared in these rentals because you never know what's going to happen. For one thing, I can almost always expect the overhead light simply not to work.
The sucking light on the panel. I ran out of 152, and last year I ran out of 152 and saw the headaches it had. It had the lock on the brakes didn't work properly, it had intermittent gas gauge indicator, and the flaps were not set right for 10, 20, and 30. When you hit it, it went all the way down to 30. I said, that's it. You're like a running airplane. That's all right. We're about to Cessna.
Roger, how come your signal is so weak?
I'm on the station in the room here. I'm not on my main transmitter. And I'm surprised you don't shut the repeater on me.
Okay, I won't even go into that. Anyway, I gotta get up tomorrow, and as you know, they stole an hour from us with the stupid daylight savings time, so I gotta hit the hay, but the invitation is definitely open, so if you wanna go up and play, we're more than welcome to do that.
What
do you
have?
Which
new
player,
sir? I think which one you had.
I bought an Arrow 3, a 1977 Arrow 3, and I stripped it. Inside and out, and put in gorgeous interior, all glass panel, just beautiful. You walk onto the ramp, you'll know which one it is.
Sounds nice. But Euro 3, that has brakes only on the left side, if I remember correctly.
Is what on the left?
Brakes. The brakes on that are just on the left, the rudders. I don't think they're on the right, if I remember correctly, on the Arrow 3.
Are you saying the brakes are only on the left side? I'm not sure I follow you.
See, the tip brakes. So on the Arrow 3, didn't the tip brakes were only on the left rudders and the left side, not on the right side.
Okay. I didn't know that. Alright, so, and I'm going to go to bed. Good talking to you, Hal. KC2RFN, and I'll be clear. Good night, or I should say good morning.
Hey, that's constant speed per tower, too. Got to watch the airflow pressure.
That is a firm.
It's better to fix pitch, I'll tell you. You can do a lot more with the constant speed. Let me go. Take it easy, and thanks for the offer. So, watch this. David Peter Zebra.
WJTV.
Net, good night at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. The time is 6:02 a.m. Monday, March 13, 2017.
Pico Park, listening on 85.
Okay there, Richie. Are you ready for the blizzard?
Ready, pal. Yeah, right. I hope not. I hope it goes somewhere else, but yeah. I don't know if you know, but Patty went to Florida to think things over. She came back and we're together again, and I was thinking things over too while she was gone. All together again.
Very good. Okay, I'm on the road right now, you know. I have to make a little stop there in the morning. Well, after my stop, I'll give you a landline there. I wanted to talk to you about something there. I'm really glad to hear everybody's doing okay there. And so far on my side, everything is okay. I just became a grandfather at the beginning of the month there. Welcome to grandfatherhood, Roger.
Congratulations, Barry.
Morning, Barry. N2MB. All right, we'll pass the mic to you there, Barry.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, thank you, Barry. No, that's not Barry. It's a jammer. Jammer, Barry. Jammer.
Can we go give you a late night later? We have to talk to you. Yes. A bit of news. I want to discuss this with you personally. Yes, it will confirm everything else. All right, N2MB, oh my goodness, your call sign again is slipping out of my tongue. N2EO, N2EO, yeah, we have a great morning here, and this is Kiss to UUY. We'll catch you later.
This is Kilowatt 6, David Peter Z for reading.
Okay, Leo. I'll catch you later. I'm happy. In mud. We'll see you later. KC2, UBI, and 2EO. Late, Barry.
Basic DPZ just reading the mail.
Red Steve Limon, President. No justice, no peace.
Acknowledge the DPZ. Okay, got you there, Captain Jammer.
Albert
Lee,
Limon, President, no justice, no peace.
Get
lane 2
later.
Limon, President, no justice, no peace.
We'll find out the schedule in the morning. KC to UEY.
Let's keep Limon, President, no justice, no peace. Okay, Leo. We'll catch you later. Thank you for giving me a call. You know, I still remember when you came up to the hospital when I had that very, very critical surgery on my spine. And I really appreciate it to this day. See you later, Leo. And to Leo. To you later, Barry. To you later, Barry.
Good morning. I see there's a couple guys who's going to keep your company, Richie. We just clear. The traffic is coming around a little hectic. All right, have a nice day there. Catch you later. Catch you to UEY.
As you two, Liam, have a nice day. God bless. KC2, UEI, M2EO.
You later, Barry.
You and Neil.
You later, Barry.
The last kinetics there, is Yankee. The last kinetics is Yankee.
And now, let's keep the line on president. Let's keep the line on president. Barry.
8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.